Welcome to Sound Practice, the business podcast for physicians and healthcare leaders, hosted by Mike Tsakopoulos and produced by the American Association for Physician Leadership.
It started a little before 8 a.m. when I spilled coffee. Then my son called upset about a grade he'd received on a final last semester. In the midst of discussing just how unfair the B was, I drove past the dry cleaners. Irritation began to course through me. Then the text message arrived. Had I heard Sally had a glioblastoma? Suddenly, my perspective changed. Sally had the real problems. I was just living an incredibly lucky life. We are all guilty of not being grateful for the good in our lives. My guest today is an expert when it comes to the neurobiology of gratitude. Learn about the science and practice of gratitude next on Sound Practice. My guest today is Linda Rozak Burton. She's an author, researcher, and executive coach. Linda is the author of Gratitude Heals, a journal for inspiration and guidance. She's also delivered a TEDx presentation entitled The Power of Gratitude to Heal the World. She incorporates neuroscience-based methodologies into her coaching. Linda Rozak Burton, welcome to Sound Practice.
Thank you, Mike. Pleasure to be here.
Oh, the pleasure's all mine. Well, I'm interested. How did you become interested in neuroscience and well-being?
Love that question. The neuroscience came to me. I was adding credentials to my coaching repertoire, if you will, and I saw that there was a neuroleadership program that really fascinated me. I've always been fascinated with the brain, to pull it apart and find out what's going on, right? And so I thought it would be very, very helpful for me as a coach to understand what the brain looks like in the workplace and how do we use what we know from the neuroscience and some of the behavior change theories that we know come from neuroscience and add that to how I would be able to provide the best type of coaching service to my clients.
You contributed an article in the winter of 2024 to the Wharton Healthcare Quarterly. The piece discusses virtuous practice. Can you tell me what this means?
Yeah, thank you. Yes. So we are not short of any data on clinician burnout and lower job satisfaction and really levels of distress that we know impact both the health and well-being of clinicians as well as the quality of the care and the outcomes of their patients. And so what our research shows is that there is a segment within healthcare where clinicians are thriving, even though the tremendous administrative burden, the electronic medical records, you know, practicing medicine almost feels like that has to come after I do all my charting and deal with some of the policies and regulations. And so what we became interested in, how do people flourish? How do they thrive? And the virtuous circle, the virtuous cycle, is we know that when we can connect with the purpose of what we do, and in the clinician's world, the purpose of healing and helping individuals, that when they can reconnect with that purpose and they can identify the values that describe who they are and that they understand the importance of the relationships that they have with all colleagues, including patients and families, that that begins to create the opportunity for them to recognize this is my practicing medicine gets me back to the reason that I entered this profession, this noble profession in the first place. And while it doesn't eliminate the distractions, it doesn't eliminate the difficulties in healthcare today, it provides more of a control. So if I know my values, if I know the virtues that define who I am as a clinician, I'm going to be more in touch with my purpose. I'm going to be more engaged with my patients in a relationship, as opposed to checking the box, you know, filling out the chart. And it brings more of a patient satisfaction to the patient-physician relationship. When we look at what patients describe as a good relationship with their physicians, it has less to do with their knowledge and their skills. It's more to do with, do you see me? Do you know who I am? Do I feel this genuine concern for my well-being? And so that's the cycle right there. If the patient feels cared for, the physician's levels of burnout begin to diminish. And that's reinforced every time that they recognize this is why I'm here, to provide good quality care. This is who I am based on my values and virtues. And we bring into the picture virtues such as forgiveness and gratitude and compassion and empathy. And we know that when we lead, when we administer care through those lenses, that the relationships that we have with our patients go beyond where they could ever be. And the same with the colleagues, with the team that any clinician is working with.
Do you find it triggers reciprocity with the patient?
100%.
To the extent that the clinician is forgiving, that the patient is likewise
yes.
forgiving?
100%. There's reciprocity that it happens in the moment. It can happen afterwards. There's downstream, what we call downstream reciprocity. And so talk about well-being, the psychological well-being is just something that we are looking at more data all the time. For instance, with gratitude, the research in gratitude has been going on now for about 20 years. It's now done all over the world. It's done with college students. It's done with senior citizens. It's done with healthcare, in academia. So it is something that we now know we need to pay more attention to these values or virtues, however we wish to describe them, for overall health and well-being.
I should have identified the title of the article that we're discussing terms from. The article is Embracing and Affirming the Good Doctor. Mm-hmm. And it in part states that patient gratitude is not dependent upon achieving positive clinical outcomes. I find that interesting. Is it dependent upon clinicians spending time with patients?
Yes. It is so dependent on that relationship. And even if there isn't a good outcome or as good of an outcome as the patient desires, if they feel that there's this genuine relationship, the sense of caring, I'm doing everything I can for you. And Dr. Robert Emmons is a scientific advisor to Accordant Health. And his most recent lecture that I attended now defines gratitude as the touch point of human existence. So when you think of gratitude described as that way, this touch point of human existence, then what you see exchanged between the physician and their patient really defines how that comes to the heart of care.
Shift gears a little bit on you, because recently we've seen a senior healthcare executive gunned down on the streets of New York. Social mm-hmm. media exploded with people surprisingly praising the gunman and cheering on murderous actions. Mm-hmm. Why are people so angry with the healthcare system?
Well, I see an anger. I don't know that it's only healthcare. I think we can see that in many areas of our lives. And I think that when people feel things are helpless or hopeless, that they don't know how else to cope with that themselves. And that anger is demonstrated in many different ways. And so that is a tragedy. And another reason why we're focused so much on well-being, when we take a look at the research, it's not just physical well-being, it's social well-being, it's emotional, mental. For some, it's very spiritual. And so I think there's an imbalance of us as humans being at our best. And when we're able to recognize what allows us to be at our best, then we're finding coping mechanisms to minimize the anger, minimize even the impact of negative events. So we all have negative events, right? And that can create some sort of small trauma, big trauma. And when we are able to find ways to cope with whatever the negative event is, we can begin to recognize that we're not ruminating as long as we normally do when something bad happens, when somebody's disrespectful, someone cuts us off in traffic. Yeah. So it's something that's readily available for us to really take a look at. Okay, this isn't ideal. However, what do I have in my life that is going well? What do I have that I can be grateful for? And so it begins to kind of balance it out to a bit where we're able to recognize that there are more good things going on in our lives than negative. It's not to deny the negative. It's not to say you can't think of any negative thoughts, because we have to. It's healthy to really try to understand what we're feeling. But then how do we, and this is where the neuroscience comes in, because of the neuroplasticity of our brains, how are we able to reframe what we're looking at, not to deny the negative, not to deny the experience, but how do we reframe that in a more healthy way, in a more genuine way? It's not, it's not rose-colored glasses. So that's where the neuroscience becomes really fascinating to us, because we know, and my personal experience is that even a really tough situation is something that can be improved. The title of the journal is Gratitude Heals, which is so true in medicine, but just true in life in general.
Do you think that the medical system of education has done a poor job with this? And here I'm thinking of residency programs that have such long hours, and it seems to be the polar opposite of what we would want for personal well-being. Are we turning out physicians without preparing them to practice gratitude and well-being?
I agree with that. I believe that there's a glimmer of research that's being looked at. I saw a study of residents in 8 different academic medical centers or schools. And part of what that research showed was that when the individual taps into who they are as a person, back to the values, right, to the virtues, why they got into medicine in the first place, how they define themselves, how they want the relationship with their patient to be the same as if it was their relative, right? So when they are able to get into that way of thinking, they find that it is very helpful. It doesn't improve the you know, the headaches that we have with EMRs, et cetera. But it sustains them. And so I'm looking, I'm hopeful for more research to be done on that, because I think it's vital to understand what's the evidence, right? That's medicine today. Well, what's the evidence that we have for our own well-being and our own, what's meaningful and purposeful in our life?
You're nationally known executive coach. I'm looking maybe for some tips for our audience. How do you help individual leaders incorporate fundamental elements of gratefulness into their leadership activities?
First, I actually try to find out, what do they have a gratitude practice? Is that something that they already have? How are they defining gratitude? Some may feel they're on different ends of the spectrum. I'll put it that way, right? And we always do a values assessment. It's very important in any coaching relationship to identify the values and the strengths of the individuals that we're working with. That creates this foundation. And from there, then we determine with our dialogue what it is that they really want to accomplish. And so some goal setting starts with that. And we explore how would they look different if they achieve these goals? How would they look different than they do today? What might be getting in their way? And what can they already celebrate that they are doing in terms of how they are accomplishing the goals that they're looking at? So it's very grounded in an assessment, in again, helping them identify who they are and what's really important to them.
Does it matter if you are working with an individual position leader or with a healthcare system on how you operate and what you look for? Because it seems to me that there may be a difference if I asked you that same question about how to incorporate elements of gratefulness into activities, if we're talking about a healthcare system as opposed to an individual.
It does depend on who we are engaging with. You may have a CEO that is really looking at creating a more healthy work environment, and they identify gratitude as being one of the core values of that culture. And so if that is the goal of the CEO, then it requires a broadening of who we're working with to identify, well, what does a culture of gratitude look like? We'll bring in the evidence, we'll bring in the science, we'll bring in the tools to help them experience what they're hoping their employees are experiencing. And the other thing is, depending on if we're talking from a cultural perspective, one of the things that we find very helpful is what we call positive deviance. So we're going to be looking for deviant people. But so positive deviant is an example of this. I was working with an outpatient centers in New Jersey several years ago, and we were looking at who were the high functioning clinics, what was the medium in terms of scores, high functioning, middle of the road, and low functioning. And when we think about positive deviance, we want to understand, what is a high functioning department? What is a high functioning division look like? And why are they functioning so well? And what can we learn from that and begin applying those learnings to the other areas? So when we're talking culture change, let's take a look at, let's assess the employee well-being, let's assess the engagement, the physician satisfaction. Where do we see high scores? And what then can we learn from an appreciative inquiry perspective as to why those scores are so high? What are the elements, the values, the strengths? So you see the similarity at that point that allow these individuals to function very, very well. And then from there, we look at what are the techniques, what are the practices, what are the approaches for broadening what's already working well in one area throughout the hospital or the system.
Interesting. This may be an odd question, but are the benefits from a practice of gratitude and well-being the same for individuals of different generations? Are the benefits universal in nature, or are there some benefits that maybe millennials get that are different than the benefits that Generation X folks get?
Yeah, the research shows the benefits are the same. So, you know, when we look at college students, right, their outcomes are going to be the same as someone in our generation, or the study done in Hong Kong years ago with senior citizens that improved their depression scores. So the benefits are the same. The approaches are going to be different. And layered on top of that, let's consider the culture of the individuals. So when we express gratitude, when we incorporate different gratitude practices within an organization, there are individuals that are going to respond well to certain approaches and some not so much. So for instance, there are individuals that are perfectly comfortable with someone acknowledging their work, expressing gratitude to them in a public place, in a public forum, you know, at the beginning of a staff meeting. But there are some cultures where that individual attention is dishonorable, it's embarrassing. It's more to that individual, it's more about what we did as a team. And we see that in Japanese football, right? Baseball. It's not just about the pitcher, not just about the outfielders. It's the team that allows the work to be so successful. So I think we have to take a look at the cultures of the individuals that are within our environment. And I also think we have to offer a variety of ways to practice it. Most of the time when I talk about journaling, many people, probably 50% of the room, will say, I don't like journaling. I tried it. I couldn't do it. I'm not successful with it. So, okay, well, there are other ways of practicing. You don't have to have a leather journal to do it. I talk a lot about visual journal. For those people that are on the more creative side, let's go through a short gratitude activity where we start with a visual, just doodling. We go through a gratitude intervention, such as three good things. What are three good things that you're grateful for? And why are you grateful? Why was that meaningful? And who is the individual that perhaps went out of their way to support you? And then we go back to the visual, and the two pictures are drastically different. When I did this for myself the first time under a coaching guide, the first one was jagged and dark and shades of gray. After I went through the activity, the picture, and I wish I could show it to you, the lines were smooth and circular, and I started grabbing different colors to add to it. So it was this shift in my mind of thinking about what I was grateful for, and then what is it that I created on my paper that was so drastically different from where there was no intervention. And again, that's tied to the neuroscience. I started using different neuropathways after the gratitude intervention.
Well, that is a superb answer to a very mediocre question. So well done on that one. Is our time together coming to an end? Could you give our audience maybe one recommendation that could make their daily life just a little better?
Daily life. It would be to schedule a practice. Because when we talk about the practice of gratitude, we're talking about creating a new mental habit. And habits take some time to form. And so I would ask the individual to identify, is morning a good time? There was one study at Duke Medical Center where a group of ICU employees would practice three good things 2 hours before bedtime. They slept better, they slept longer. Their emotional exhaustion levels were decreased, as well as some depression scores. And so it has to feel like it's something that you can practice long enough to where it becomes a habit. And it could be as simple as, if you're a walker or a runner, use that opportunity to what I call environmental gratitude. So, right? So if you're out walking, actually be very in tuned with the colors, the textures, the sounds, the sights. I did this for a group of students at Virginia Tech, which is my alum. And they went out and they practiced this this awe walk, or this environmental gratitude walk. And they came back after that and talked about things that they noticed for the first time. And they had been on campus for 2 to 3 years already. So incorporate it into any activity that you already have, so it doesn't feel like it's another thing you have to do.
Linda, for those listening today that would like to learn more about this topic and even potentially work with you, what do you suggest as next steps, and can you tell people how to find you?
They can find me on LinkedIn, Linda Rozak Burton on LinkedIn. Instagram is LRRozak. They can email Linda@accordanthealth.com or text me. I'm not opposed to texting. I have the cell is 410-707-3118. And so any way you choose.
This has been phenomenally interesting, and I think has the real potential to change clinicians' daily lives. So thank you so much for being a guest on Sound Practice. My guest today has been Linda Rozak Burton. Thank you so much for being on Sound Practice.
Thank you, Mike. Delighted to be together today.
My thanks to Linda Rozak Burton for her time and focus upon improving physicians' daily lives. My thanks also to the American Association for Physician Leadership for making this podcast possible. Please join me next time on Sound Practice. We release a new episode every other Wednesday.
You've been listening to Sound Practice, the business podcast for physicians and healthcare leaders. Check out the show notes for this episode at soundpracticepodcast.com. If you have any suggestions for future episodes, we'd love to hear them. Email us at info@soundpracticepodcast.com. Subscribe to Sound Practice wherever you listen to podcasts so you can automatically receive our episodes. And please rate us and comment on the podcast in iTunes and Google Play. Sound Practice is presented and produced by the team at American Association for Physician Leadership. We are the world's premier organization for all aspects of physician leadership in every sector of healthcare. Learn more at physicianleaders.org. That man Robin, Rick Capow.